it's meant a lot. Because a lot of folks getting back in 1919 didn't, one, get the acclaim that the earlier soldiers had gotten. They were ignored, largely, and their jobs had been taken.
Well, that's what I mean. I had a job to go back to, and damn few of them had.
Well, tell me, you went to Halifax, and you had no training at all beforehand.
No.
Were you in civilian dress when you arrived at Halifax?
When I arrived there, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And where in Halifax were you?
Well, we stayed in the armory on the right on the commons in Halifax.
And were you the only unit at the armory?
Hmm? Yes, we were the unit at the army.
And what unit was this? What unit was this?
What was the 85th?
Well, I thought you said the 85th was founded later on. Okay, so we're dealing here with about early 1916?
Yeah.
Okay, this is when the 85th came into being then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so who was the commanding officer of the 85th at this time?
Colonel Borden.
Any relation to the Prime Minister?
I don't think so, no. Not so far as I know.
Yeah. What had been his background?
Well, he was army was his background.
Had he been a permanent force officer?
Yeah, he was a permanent force.
How old a man was he?
Probably around 40 somewhere.
Think a bit old to be commanding a battery or a battalion?
not in those days, no.
What had been his civilian occupation, do you know?
His civilian?
Yeah.
He wasn't. He was a permanent force officer.
Good for you. I'm a bit cloudy headed. What about the rest of the men? Were they all from Nova Scotia?
Well, New Brunswick and Nova Scotia.
So it wasn't simply a Nova Scotia battalion?
Yes, it was.
But they did have recruits from other areas as well?
Oh, yes, a few, sure.
Yeah.
But it was Nova Scotia based in Nova Scotia mostly.
Mm-hmm.
There was one company from our company from around Amherst, which was A Company. B Company was down in Colchester and Hats and like that. C Company had a lot of people around that part, and then D Company came from Cape Breton.
So the companies had been recruited on that sort of outlying basis, and they filled their own ranks and then proceeded to Halifax.
Yeah.
What sort of training could you do in the armories? I think you'd be rather limited, wouldn't you?
Do what?
The sort of training you'd be able to do at the armories?
Yeah.
Kind of limited, I would think.
Well, we were the whole commons out there.
And you were marching?
You were trained out on the commons, not in the armory.
Mm-hmm. But did you have rifle ranges?
Get what?
Did you have rifle ranges?
Yes. Where the hell were they? Well, I guess we didn't have any actual shooting in Halifax.
Mm-hmm.
That was all done at down at Kentville.
Which was close by.
Aldershot, Nova Scotia.
Mm-hmm.
We went there in the spring. That was after we had recruited another three regiments.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell me, the 85th, did it have any ties to other CEF battalions then serving in France? Like the Black Watch has three different regiments, or three different battalions that are all known as Black Watch.
Well, we were more or less, as I understood it, and sort of tied up to the Seaforth Highlanders in England.
Really?
Mm.
Were they officially yours?
The 85th Battalion was in the Victory Parade in London in 1918.
Mm-hmm.
We were a Highland regiment, but we didn't have kilts.
Why not?
We didn't have time to get them made. Couldn't get the materials and what's up.
I take it then in the trenches you'd be wearing the khaki kilts? If kilts at all?
Not wearing, we never wore kilts in the trenches.
Not at all?
No one, nobody else did, except just...
Well, I've heard tales from this Black Watch friend of mine out in Brentwood, and they would wear their kilts in the trenches, and the khaki kilts.
Yeah.
Because they didn't want to get their tartan dirty.
Yeah.
And he used to scare the heck out of the Germans because they would be bare bummed underneath. Mm.
Well, I think stopped very shortly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think. They didn't continue that. Christ, they were frozen to death.
That's right, yeah.
Eh?
Hygiene would be dreadful.
And get those kilts wet? They weighed 2 tons instead of one.
Yeah, and they would have rotted right on.
Hmm?
They would have rotted right
on.
Oh,
yes. They couldn't wear them. Anyway, what I started to say was we were the Victory Parade and the Seaforth Highlanders loaned us kilts for that parade.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't there, but this is what I understand.
And have we since, or did we at the time, adopt Seaforth tartan as our kilt?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Seaforth plaid is the... I don't know what the Nova Scotians, North Novies do now, but they did use a... Well, it's the McDonald plaid which the Seaforths use.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether the North Novies and the Cape Breton Highlanders use the Nova Scotia tartan now or not, but earlier they did, there was a Seaforth kilt.
Mm-hmm. Well, what was the level of training like at Halifax? The level, the duration, the kind of training. Was it the kind to prepare you for trench warfare?
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't simply drilling and rifle range?
Well, no, it was just four and fours and one thing another route on the commons. When they got down to Aldershot or Kentville that summer, then they got the other training with rifles and shooting and
mm-hmm.
bayonet work.
Well, tell me, was it fourth Division formed at Halifax? Because you were part of 4th Division.
Yes, but we joined the 4th Division after we got to France.
I see.
Those divisions weren't forced formed in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the Canadian forces were assembled after they got to England. They this regiment and that regiment, one thing another, or two, they might have had the nucleus of it before they got there.
Mm-hmm.
But as I say, we were put into the 4th Division after Vimy Ridge.
Mm, right.
The 7th, the 8th was pretty well busted up during the attack on Vimy Ridge.
You had been a reserve unit that had been pushed up.
Yeah.
Well, can I ask you this? What sort of equipment would you be training with? Would you have the Ross rifle or the Lee Enfield rifle?
It was the Ross rifle. No. I guess with the Lee Enfield rifle we had.
You had it by that time then?
There were only a few of the Ross rifles around at that time. They used them because it was a rifle to work with,
mm-hmm.
but the Lee Enfield was the one that was used during the war.
Yeah. What about training with machine guns?
Well, that then too was done out on the outside when we got there. Of course, a machine gun, you're supposed to be able to take it apart and put together in the dark, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that training was done right in the armory, where you had a table to put the
pieces on, yeah.
Pieces on like that.
Yeah. Would you be given free rein in the evenings to go out into Halifax and...
Did the what?
Were you given free rein in the evenings to go out to Halifax and...
We were a homeboy regiment. We hadn't, as long as you didn't get into trouble, you could have a pass until 12 o'clock.
But 12 was the curfew?
Well, the lights out was 10 o'clock, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But anybody in the regiment that was able to carry out their training and not get into trouble and like that could have a pass until 12 o'clock.
Could you get longer passes if you had asked for it?
Well, no, not unless you had to ask for them, yes, but the only way you could have a longer pass would be staying out all night.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think any of the, even the ones in Halifax, lived at home overnight, except a few officers or higher NCOs.
So what sort of pay would you be getting?
Hmm?
What sort of pay would you be getting at this point? Do you recall?
$1.10 a day.
$1.10 a day?
Hmm.
And would you be required to spend any of it within?
No.
That was yours?
That was yours to squander.
Did you? You hear stories about how men would gamble away their money, you know, in the short space of time. It went on, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Did it ever.
Yeah. Was there such a thing as, Valcartier, they had a thing called a tin town, set right on the outskirts of the camp itself.
They had it on everyone.
Really?
Every regiment had tin town.
Was there one of the armories at
Halifax?
How
extensive? Well, no, not at the armory, no, but you get outside, when you get bivouacked and like that, you know, there's a tin town around wherever there's a bunch of soldiers.
Bunch of soldiers with nothing to do and money in their pockets.
Hmm?
I said a bunch of soldiers with nothing to do and money in their pockets.
Well, nothing to do and no money in their pockets.
Usually.
Yeah.
That's when trouble can begin.
Hmm.
Yeah. What did you think of things like tin towns and the people who ran them?
Oh, I know. They were just camp followers, if you want to put the... You go into tin town, if you had any money, if you get out with it, you were very lucky. You could get anything, you do about anything you want in most of those tin towns, you know.
Well, I speak from a point of extreme ignorance, because I know what the term means. I know roughly what was in them, but how would they be shaped? Would it be along a road?
Oh, no, they just get a shelter any place they could. No shack or anything.
Mm-hmm. So it wasn't the case of...
Tin Town wasn't run by the army, you know.
Oh, no. These were just war profiteers,
yeah,
if you like.
Yeah, yeah.
On a very small scale.
Yeah.
But were they set up... Well, Tin Town rather gives the impression that they set up these buildings of corrugated iron just very quickly and very roughly.
If they could find it, yes. They could use that. They use anything they could to cover it up.
Including tents and things like that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And would they follow sort of a town pattern, like with one main road and with the
facilities? Don't think so. It was just a...
Just a clump of...
Clump around any place they could get to put there. A tin town was tin town more in name than it actually was in terms of a building or anything like that.
It was just a phrase used, I guess, wasn't it?
Hmm?
It was just a phrase used.
It was more a phrase than anything else. But there might be three or four old buildings along there, or shelters of some kind, and, oh, well, that's Tin Town.
What was the soldiers' opinion of Tin Town? Did they like it, or did they hate the people who were doing it?
Oh, I don't know.
What about your own?
Hmm?
What was your own feeling about Tin Town?
Well, I don't think I ever bothered to stop to think about it.
Did you ever go into it?
Hmm?
Did you ever go into Tin Town?
Well, how could you? How would you know whether it's Tin Town or not? It might be a building here, or there might be one 50 yards down the highway or something like that, and they say, oh, that's Tin Town's over that way. It might be anywhere there.
Mm-hmm.
If you wanted something that you thought you could get in Tin Town, you went there to get it. Perhaps you could. Perhaps there'd be a building down there where you knew that you could buy some liquor.
Mm-hmm.
Well, say it's over in Tin Town.
Yeah.
But
it wasn't a place you'd go to just to go to. Oh, no. Like they wouldn't have a saloon, for example.
Well, they might have not set up as a saloon, but they might have a place where you could get a drink. There might be a whole flock of women hanging around there today.
Mm.
Wouldn't be there tomorrow.
Oh, was that transient? People were moving.
Oh, yeah.
Because I have this impression in my mind that there was a lot of alcohol, lots of gambling, and lots of prostitution.
Mm-hmm.
And is that right or wrong, do you think?
Well, yes.
Yeah.
I think it's right, but not to the extent that it's a great many, 50 or 60 people congregating there and selling liquor and prostitution and gambling like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing that you might find interesting is that in the official history, this book right here, which was done about 1962, Colonel Mickelson, who wrote it, says that Salisbury Plain, while the first contingent was there in, I guess, the winter of 1415, that there were about 1,500 cases of reported venereal disease,
mm-hmm.
which leads one to think that the Tin Towns were very much in evidence there,
mm-hmm.
or at least the proximity to other towns
mm-hmm.
led to that sort of behavior. And it's something that I ask because it's very intriguing as to the whole setup and mm-hmm. and what they did and how they did it. It happens that anyway when you take these young men away from a situation and you shove them in to some unnatural way of living.
Mm.
I mean, that's my feeling at least.
I don't think it matters where you are or anything else. You take a bunch of people you say are not used to that.
Mm-hmm.
You say there's 1,500 cases of venereal disease reported.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these regiments came from the back countries, a lot of people from the back areas.
Mm-hmm.
They come out there, the first pay they get, let's go find some women.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't take many long to spread 1,500 cases of venereal disease around two or three regiments in there that have a bunch of boys that have never seen a town before they got there and never had any experience with women of that kind.
Mm-hmm. What's funny, you know, there's a chap who was with the RCDs in the First War. He
mm-hmm.
told me that there were brothels behind the line in which men would be in this huge lineup for one or two prostitutes on this second floor building, and they would just stand and wait in line. And it doesn't really take a great intellect to see that if that woman is infected, every one of those men who are going in is going to be infected as well. And there was no way of determining whether she was or not, because there were no means to. I mean, it's such a disreputable...
May I say one thing?
Surely.
Is this fellow a friend of yours?
Yes.
He's got a good imagination.
Never that bad.
I wouldn't say it's never that bad. I never heard of that.
Mm-hmm. perhaps embellish it a bit.
Well.
But nonetheless, this was a unit coming out of
I wouldn't. Line. I wouldn't contradict him if I were talking to him face to face. But I say, I never heard of it. I know lots of cases, but I've never in my life any time heard of a lineup of people waiting for one prostitute.
Well, this wouldn't be at a tin town or at a camp. This
no,
was the line behind the trenches
yeah, sure.
in France.
I've never heard of it happening in even in the best of times.
Really? Then he's quite a Brian Mulrooney kind of talker. He's very fluid.
Well,
it could be that he has embellished it extremely.
As I say, I think that requires a pretty good imagination.
In many ways.
After we were in Halifax for a while, drilling every day got pretty monotonous. I had done quite a lot of bookwork in the bank. I went looking for something a little bit easier to do, and I worked with some fellows I knew were running the orderly room there. And I worked with them for a while, and then I went to the doctor's office. Old Colonel Hayes was the doctor in the regiment, and I knew Colonel Hayes from my childhood. There was another doctor there, Pat Wilson, Captain Wilson. I also knew him and his parents and his brother and all like that. I had access to all those medical records, and there were quite a number of cases of what's the word I want? Anyway,
gonorrhea,
yeah. but nothing to the extent of
an epidemic.
Perhaps a half a dozen cases or something like that. Perhaps a lot of it was covered up, but they were inspected for venereal disease.
On a weekly basis? Or?
Well, I don't think it was weekly. Perhaps it was weekly. Yeah. I don't think it was. Anyway. The doctor went around and examined, was inspected each one of us. at Aldershot, there were quite a number of prostitutes were there, but they were in the little village there or some accommodation somewhere, but never
overt solicitation.
Big crowds around or anything like that. It was
orderly.
Yeah, it was more or less covered up pretty well.
It's funny, I've asked several questions in the same mode to other people, and it seems that if someone did contract the disease, one day he would be with his battalion or his company, the next day he would be gone and there'd be no explanation. He'd just be gone. And that officers, if it occurred to them, they'd be sent to a special hospital in England, which a Dr. Falconer, who is now a doctor, called Pecker Hill.
Yeah.
Which was in England somewhere.
Oh, yes.
And remember, these were the days before penicillin, so there wasn't much they could do for them, I guess.
No, they they had certain treatments that they gave them and would help them quite a bit. Got them cleared up so they could go back to work. I don't know. Well, I never saw very much, although a lot of people talked about how much there was. They talk about how much there is through the country right now.
Yes. But a different time, too.
Yeah, sure.
It's always going to be with us no matter what we do. It's just a blight that we have to deal with. I asked you who the commanding officer was. Was Ralston with the battalion at the time?
Ralston took command of the battalion afterwards because Colonel Borden was... Well, I guess he got a little bit older. He mm-hmm. was too old to go into the trenches and do like that. And, well, stay in there and all the cold and wet and...
And whatnot, yeah. But was Ralston, he wasn't with you in Halifax then?
Oh, yes.
In what capacity?
Ralston was a lieutenant in command of my... platoon when I signed up.
What platoon were you with?
Number 1 platoon, A Company.
And he was your platoon leader. You say you knew him quite well.
Oh, yes.
Could you tell me a bit about him? Because he did become our defense minister.
Well, Colonel Ralston was born and brought up in Amherst.
Mm-hmm.
He was a lawyer. And... I knew his parents, and I knew him. I mean, I wasn't intimate with him, quite a lot older than I, but I knew it.
Mm-hmm.
The families down there knew each other at that time, even out in the country. My family knew most of the people around the other towns.
Mm-hmm. When he saw you, did he know you?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Did you have any misgivings about being in the same platoon with he commanding?
Oh, no.
Well, what was your feeling for him before?
Hmm?
What was your feeling for him? Did you like him as a man, or...?
Ralston?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, he was a good man.
What about professionally as an officer? Was he good?
Yes, he was a good officer.
Yeah. Was he the kind that... cared for the
yeah. Yes, he was very good in both in action and out,
and his men were the uppermost thing in his mind.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
he was long gone from the platoon before we got to France, but I've seen Ralston in the trenches, and I saw, I remember Colonel Ralston at Vimy Ridge very well.
Mm-hmm. Was there anything that stands out in your mind while still in Canada about Ralston and the way he acted, his conduct, how he dealt with superior officers perhaps? He was from a rather prominent family, wasn't he? The Ralstons.
Well, no, I don't know if he's prominent, but he was one of the people that was well known in Amherst.
Mm-hmm.
I think his father was postmaster at one time.
And I take it Ralston had gone to university and things like that.
Oh, yes, he was a graduate of Dalhousie, I think. He was a lawyer anyway, had taken some cases to the Supreme Court in England prior to the war, and pleaded the cases in England.
Mm-hmm. Well, how did the other men in the platoon, did they feel the same way towards him?
Yeah.
He had their respect, in other words.
Hmm?
He had their respect.
Oh, yes.
Because that's something that is not common between men and officers in the First mm. War. I mean, most men hated their officers' guts. I mean, there was such antagonism between
yes,
them.
Yes, I know cases that there are officers that were not liked.
There were some officers who, when their backs were turned during an offensive, found bullets coming from the opposite direction.
Yes, I know that.
Yeah.
They didn't, I know of cases where they didn't even wait for bullets. They,